Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is a party cast, and we've got a party full of party people here to party. We've got Tim, Purnell, Chris, and for some reason, Jacob's here. How's everyone doing?
Yay!
Party, that's a lie. You know it. Bold-faced lie claims. Otherwise, I'm okay.
It's got to be a party. Tim and I need something to cheer us up after wrestling tonight.
Oof. We just talked about it. We don't need to relitigate it. Yeah. If you watch Dynamite, you know.
I mean, I played a game of Madden and the Steelers beat the Ravens, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is that a good thing? I don't know. I don't do the wrestling.
Yeah, it's
that
good.
It has nothing to do with wrestling, but.
Oh, you got to subscribe.
You know what I mean? You guys kept me on this. I mean, I don't follow. Well, I tell you, I don't follow wrestling either, but I also don't follow football. So I don't know who the team people like, unless it's the Eagles, because they get me free food and discounts at Dunkin' Donuts. So
really,
nice.
Yeah, if you live out towards Philly,
we get them
down here in Lancaster too.
Hmm. Yeah, see, people are always like, you don't have your Phillies, aren't you? Philadelphia Eagles aren't your team, as they are. When I get fucking discounts, they're definitely my team. Absolutely my team. So
same. But, my love can be bought.
Damn right. Absolutely. It doesn't even cost much for my love. Shoot, give me a freaking Garbage Pail Kid set. We're in.
Exactly.
Take it up. But, you know. But for the most part, that's our team, though. Depending on how far south you go in Delaware, you'll end up with love for the freaking Ravens, too. Which is its own kind of weird. It's like, wait a minute.
Yeah, but, I don't know. Tim and I actually watch wrestling with a bunch of Ravens fans. All Baltimore people. And I'm a Steelers fan, so there's lots of clashing there.
Like, are they like direct rivals or something?
Yeah, Steelers and Ravens are like, they hate each other.
It's like the grounds.
I think it's more like Steelers Browns hate each other. Like most Ravens fans have like a grudging respect for the Steelers.
Well, the Ravens used to be the Browns, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it just followed.
I think the pure hatred
they're basically both the Browns.
I don't even know how these rivalries even come up. It's just like one day a guy goes to a bar, he's a person with a difference
against each other.
Yeah, it's like, wait a minute, your team's not my team. Fuck you.
Like, okay, really?
Everybody needs to like the same team, or I'm mad.
It throws me for a loop.
You know what I like? I like the fact that Root Beer just subbed for the 34th month. That is craziness.
Is it the Riveting Sports Jams? Is that what did it?
Yes, obviously.
Please
sign up for our Patreon for the special Sportscast edition.
Sportsball shenanigans.
Yeah.
It's what plants crave. That's what I was told to say, right? That works.
What is that? Brondo?
Brondo.
Brondo.
It's what plants crave. Yeah.
It actually makes me sad. I never got into sports, and I legitimately tried for quite a bit on multiple sports. That's like a great, equalizer. That's like common denominator for a lot of people's social interactions is sports. It's kind of like how video games are in some circles. Where like, no matter what you're like, what you're fond of, everybody likes sports, or a lot of people like sports. So I wanted to get down with that too, but nothing has ever clicked for me. It just doesn't. Like, I wish it did. Football, basketball, tennis. Middle-aged tennis is kind of closest it's ever come, is that one. But football, basketball, tennis. Actually tried soccer, though soccer was more the video game component than the live-action component. Rugby I can kind of at least appreciate because they get freaking wrecked in that game. cleats for days. For the most part, nothing's ever made me see, be like, I want to sit down and watch this sport play over the course of 2 hours. Nothing's worked. Maybe Super Bowl.
What you need to do is you need to find a buddy to go like to baseball games with. You don't even have to fucking pay attention to the game that's being played because then you're just shooting the shit with somebody drinking beer and eating, you know, overpriced stadium food for like 3-4 hours. And then,
well, here's the thing, I've done that. Like, I agree with you. Like, that can be fun. But the problem with that is now I'm spending money to go to an event to not enjoy the event, but just to be there with the people. So what ends up happening is I do it when, like, say, like a person, like a friend's having a birthday gathering. It's like, hey, we're all going to go to check out the Orioles or something. You want to go? I'm like, I want to hang out with my friends, so sure, I'll go. And I have a good time. And it's like, how much did it cost you to get in there? Like $50. And what did you do? Did you enjoy the game? I didn't watch it. What did you do? I drank beer that cost twice the price and ate food that cost twice the price. But we laughed. At one point, the mascot ran on the field and kicked the child in the nuts. It was great.
That would be pretty good.
That's a memory you'll never forget.
Neither will that kid's medical bill. But it was. But that's pretty much what it boils down to. It's like, yeah, I will engage that, knowing that I'll get the social out of it. But the other part of it is, like, you know, just, you know, people watching the games in the houses, which isn't quite as fun. But like I said, with Super Bowl, at least I get the commercials. So I'm one of those people. It's like, I like the ads. But
now that you mentioned it, I like watching mascots fuck with people. I think that's like primetime viewing, like watching.
I'm not gonna lie, I thought you were about to just say I like watching mascots fuck, and I was like,
oh, I'm not, well, you Joe's
coming out as a fur.
I'm about to say I'm not quite sure what sporting event would encourage that and allow it on network TV, but sign me up.
That's a different kind of primetime television.
They'll have football games of like a peewee team against like a team of all mascots, like full-sized humans in mascots against little kids in football equipment, and they're just steamrolling them, like knocking them over, and the kids are trying to tackle them and they're just shoving them off. I love watching shit like that.
Now, are the kids crying or are they kind of in on it and having fun?
Both.
Okay, I'll take that. I'm like, because I thought you were going to tell me it's all like they're all in on it, and the kids are just like, yay, we're getting our asses beat by it.
This is, I mean, the nice
way to usually know what they're getting into when they're agreeing to play a team of mascots. But
Gritty and the Philly Fanatic team up to make Gritty's children insane. Cry.
Gritty, I think, does meth.
I love Gritty.
Gritty's amazing.
Like, fuck the Flyers. I love Gritty, though.
As you should, because I mean, Gritty's the shit. Like, Gritty
definitely.
Is, what do you say, Chris?
Girl, I was going to say, definitely had the viral marketing forces behind him.
Oh, absolutely. Like, he's a freaking amazing character. So, and I love him for it.
Because I'm really left politically, I always see, like, Gritty as, like, a socialist, whatever. Like, Gritty is, you know, a socialist, like, you know, hero. I wonder if, like, the right has tried to, like, do something similar. If, like, we're both just, like, you know, being subjected to the same, like, kind of, hey, Gritty agrees with you politically. Is there, like, a Nazi Gritty?
That's a good, so, I thought you were going to say a different mascot, but now you got me thinking, what if it's just Gritty, but with different marketing?
Just Gritty, so, with, like, a swastika.
Yeah, so, actually, like, a few years back, some far-right folks, I don't know if they were necessarily neo-Nazis, but they briefly tried to co-opt Gritty, and it just didn't fly.
Okay, that happens.
Tell me more about this co-opting and how it failed. It was like Gritty himself, like, he pulled like an anonymous, is like, this is, I am hijacking this just to tell you that Gritty don't fuck with you.
Well, it was, if I remember correctly, it was a lot of like memes that had dog whistles in them. And like, you know, like stuff that like, oh, this sounds good, or like, you know, like kind of leftist. But like, if you actually like read it, you're like, like, we know where this actually came from.
Yeah,
Gritty, don't fuck with that. Don't fuck with that. Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. Gritty's amazing. That's all I know. He's a great mascot character.
Tim, what are your thoughts on Gritty?
He is not a Nazi.
That's as good as we can ask for.
Yes, and I
feel like that's the bare minimum you can ask for in a sport.
Anybody, really, right?
Yeah.
Like, Jesus, fucking hell! Did you?
That was like very simple. That's the bare minimum. Like, tell me more about the Philly Fanatic. Well, he's not a Nazi. He does rob banks.
Oh, no, the Philly Fanatic is a Nazi. Gritty isn't.
No, he's not.
No, he's not. No, you don't fucking pick on the Philly Fanatic like that.
Philly Fanatic's really into QAnon.
Quilly Fanatic. No, he's great. He's got a great personality. He makes children laugh. He does eat them sometimes, but he's very generous about the ones he eats. You know, he makes sure the family's taken care of, so I can appreciate that.
God damn. Should we get to reviews?
I think we better.
I don't know how to segue that shit.
It was definitely it was time for reviews when Nazi Gritty showed up. That was when it was time.
Yeah, but we don't know when to stop, obviously. First game to talk about tonight is Trifox, developed by Glowfish Interactive, published by Big Sugar Games, released October 13th on the Switch, 14th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC for $19.99. PS4 and PS5 versions will follow in the future. After his home is attacked and his TV remote stolen, Trifox sets out in pursuit of the mysterious looters in an action-packed adventure. Use magic, might, and marvelous gadgets to outfox foes across four danger-filled worlds as you fight your way to a final showdown at Villain HQ. Chris and Jacob, both of you played this one. Chris, how about you start? What is Trifox?
Okay, well, Trifox is a... I keep trying to, I don't know, I like the name, it's very evocative, and I actually figured out, like, what they meant by it, too. It actually has a meaning. So Trifox is where you play the fox. Does he have a name? I'm sorry, I didn't catch it.
Don't know. Foxy?
Yeah, I don't...
It's like a wordless game, so okay, let's just call him, Mr. Fox. With apologies to Wes Anderson, I guess. it's a non-story. It's kind of like it'll definitely remind you of, like, you know, N64 like platformers, in the sense that, like, one thing happens, and now actually kind of reminds me of Plock. Like, the reason why Plock is on his adventure is because somebody stole his flag that is outside of his house, and like that's similar here. It's just. It's like it very cinematically, like, goes through this fox's house, like when you start the game, showing all these pictures of him growing up, showing his possibly friends, family. Again, it's a wordless story, so and you know, it shows this, you know, adult fox, like, kind of, you know, hanging out on a chair, but then he goes to get his TV remote and it's not there, and it does the, like, the camera panning out, like, while he's screaming, like, no! And then you start on your adventure to go find your TV remote. Now, the thing that happens, like, you kind of learn the basics. It's a isometric kind of top-down thing. It's hard to describe, like, exactly what game it's like, but it's very familiar to me. But yeah, you run around and you learn to jump and double jump, of course, and, you know, do things. But then eventually... within the first few minutes, you stumble across a thing that allows you to choose from three jobs. And now you get to decide, and, you know, it's three jobs for a fox, so try fox, get it? Yeah, you get to choose your first ability, which is going to be based on a melee attacker, a magician fox who wears a cool top hat, and I don't know, like, his eyes are, like, glowing white, like, it's weird. It's magic, yeah, he's magic. That's actually the one I picked too. And then there's the engineer fox who uses gadgetry and stuff like that. And as you go through the game, you collect fox coins, I don't know, and you eventually get to kind of a central hub from which you go into, like, other levels and stuff. It's very, like, rare platformer on the Nintendo 64 style, where you just, you know, you got your central hub, you go to different stages that unlock as you do things, and of course you have a room where you can then use those points to purchase more abilities and assign them to the four shoulder buttons. So you can actually mix it up. You can be a magician that has, like, the ground pound, like, from the warrior you know, side of things, or you can, like, get the, you know, like, they all have an ability that lets them, like, cover more ground than the double jump. So like the warrior has like a dash, the magician has a spell, a teleportation spell, and the engineer has a straight up helicopter backpack, which is great. I feel like I should have picked the helicopter backpack because his first two things he gets is a gun and turrets. So what are you saying, Jacob?
I'm not going to lie. I ended up finding the helicopter backpack to be way more useful than the dash or the teleportation thing.
Nice.
That teleportation just became way too unpredictable to figure out on the fly where the fuck I was going to land.
Yeah.
Which was also part of my issue with like the gameplay of this. Like, especially at the beginning, I found it way too unforgiving. For like where the hell you're landing, and like even with the helicopter, which made it somewhat easier, it was still an absolute bitch, like landing on tops of like the raised pillars or islands and stuff like that, and I would always just end up falling into the water.
That is actually something. I think this game breaks one of the important rules of a 3D platformer, and that's that your shadow has to indicate where you're going to land. But instead, this game dynamically has your shadow move around in this relative arc along with your jump, which makes more sense perhaps in a graphical way, but it serves you in no way to like actually, pick your jumps, you know?
There is a landing indicator, though. I know
it is. Yeah, it's very, there's like a little circle kind of thing.
If you're using the teleportation thing, it's really like go get fucked. Like,
yeah,
because you can't really do that on the fly.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, but you're not going to be, it's not going to be precise at all.
Yeah, the thing about the teleport spell is that, like, you know, so this game also, like, the right stick faces your character in a different direction. Like, you don't actually control the camera or anything. It's a twin stick shooter in that sense. And your teleportation spell, you know, you get to pick where you teleport based on that right stick. So if you're good at like twin stick shooters and you kind of get used to it, then yeah, you can teleport and, you know, aim the stick at a certain place. And of course the light will appear where you're going to appear. But yeah, it's, it does take some getting used to. I might suggest a helicopter in that sense, but yeah. It's basically a game where you go through the stages through these different maps that are, you know, various backdrops and things like that, fight your enemies and collect those power-ups, and then yeah, eventually find your remote control. It's pretty cut and dry that way, which I appreciate.
I want to give them props to their hidden collectibles, the little gems you could find in the stages. I can't find some of them. Like, they're hidden.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they require like certain power-ups. Like to get,
I don't know. I mean, that would, first stage, like they were just hidden out of sight that you had to go the right way.
Mm.
I know in like stage 1-3, it had like four or five of them in there, and I found one.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I did terrible on that level.
Well, it's, you know, good if you're going to have a collect-a-thon, at least, you know, give people some mystery to it.
Gotta find that stuff.
Don't just be like Donkey Kong 64 and literally just make like 3,000 of them.
Jacob, what are your thoughts on Tri-Fox?
So, I mean, I do appreciate the fact that there is a lot of replayability to it. Because, I mean, you know, if you want to play the straight warrior character, cool. If you want to be the straight engineer, cool. Or if you want to be like the engineer magician, like you can fuck around with stuff so much. Like, and so you can... with the hub worlds, like you could just go back to a level and replay it and see if like there's an easier way to, you know, go about doing everything. I really did appreciate that. The graphics are cute, but the gameplay is a bit rough. I mean, it's something that I think could easily be. I don't mean it from like a game sense.
I don't really know what I'm talking about. But.
You just throw in like five lines of code, you're good.
There's a toggle switch for easy.
There's a macro that you can get. Just download it.
You know, just
to make a game better macro.
No, but I mean, like it's something that's like, you know, it's not game breaking. Like it's not like, oh, this is like this. There's nothing salvageable in this game. It's honestly, it's fun. Like there's a couple of improvements that, you know, I think need to be made, but otherwise, like, it's solid. I had a good time with it.
I think it's cute enough. I don't know. I didn't have the trouble that you had, Jacob, with the game. I do think some of the stages could get overly long. Like, some of the stages could stretch out to be like 30 minutes or so, and like, just come on, speed it up. I don't want to spend that long. And I don't know if there's any like checkpoints that save during the level. So I don't want to just quit out and hope that I'm saved mid-level.
Yeah, I had so much trouble figuring out, like, do I just turn it off, or do I, like, have to save it somewhere? Oh,
that is never a good feeling.
Yeah, so I left it paused for the first day. I was just, like, putting it in sleep mode and being like, oh, I got other games I got to play. I need to quit out of this. And then I did, and yeah, it saved at a relatively, you know, good location. But yeah, I was like, well, okay.
Yeah, well, the game's sitting at $20. Chris, what do you think?
I think for $20, the content is what sells it for sure. The gameplay, I didn't have much problem with the gameplay. However, I did have some trouble with what I would consider like maybe not the best frame rate or like game movement. Like, your character moves very slow, but also starts to speed up. But like, none of the places I played in were like long enough that I needed that speed up. I just needed the character to overall move faster.
Yeah.
And then sometimes if there's too much going on, especially when you got like turrets going on or something like that, you know, then it can make it crawl. But I mean, for $20, again, I think that like it's way too cool of an upgrade system to not check out. Like, you know, it could have used maybe some more polish, but I mean, that's a minor complaint. Like, if we're dealing with like a $50 game, I would be like, okay, y'all gotta cook this up a little longer. But no, for $20, I think this one's a buy it. As much as I want to call it a try it, Fox. The game charmed me too much. I can't use that pun, so I'm just referring to it.
Not a try Fox. It's a buy Fox.
Yeah, it's a buy Fox.
Jacob, your thoughts?
I mean, I'd be more comfortable with 15 because I'm a cheap ass, but for 20, I wouldn't bitch either. I'd recommend it as a buy it. Shut up. No, I didn't.
Just low key.
It's a low key complaint.
Shut up. Next game, The Darkest Tales, developed by Trinity Team, published by 101XP, released October 13th on Xbox One Series X and S for $24.99, PC for $19.99. When a nightmare creeps into reality, the only ones that can help are those whose magical powers we've believed in since childhood. A brave teddy bear heads to the far side of Happily Ever After to rescue his owner, Alicia. Tim, scissor me, what's going on with this one?
Scissor me, Danny Bear.
What the hell does that mean?
Okay, you need to watch wrestling, Purnell. Like, it was National Scissoring Day a couple of weeks ago. Where were you?
Yeah.
Not scissoring, apparently.
Getting scissored or being involved in scissor acts or antics.
Well, you need to fix that.
I hear scissor act too.
I scissor my son every day. Anyways, so this game So we got here is a pretty decently solidish platformer that is set in levels that are adapted from various fairy tales. You have probably heard these ones before. It's your owner, Alicia, is missing, and this little fairy pulls this dusty old grumpy bear out of the toy box, who I appreciate just being grumpy and ornery and like saying tarnation and darn and heck and just being clean with his language in a very endearing sort of way.
Very curmudgeon-y.
Very curmudgeon-y. Gets pulled out to go in and save Alicia from these nightmares that are apparently ravaging her. And yes, your weapon of choice is a pair of scissors with one scissor wielded in each hand. So, yep. Your little fairy buddy follows you around in an AV sort of way. It is apparently annoying in an AV sort of way because, boy, was my son getting pissed when I was struggling with one part and he had to hear her voice lines over and over again. And I was just like, dude, you just got to let it go. You just got to let it happen. Let it wash over you. Just let it become part of the background. It's scripted. I can't do anything. She's not going to stop. But yeah, you get in there and, you know, whenever you start whenever I start, like, you know, a game that is going to involve platforming, like, you kind of can tell a lot about the game from the second you hit the jump button. It's like, does this jump suck? And this jump doesn't suck. Is it the best jump ever? No, not really, but it's pretty decent. It's pretty solid. I wasn't mad about it. When I hit jump, your bear ascends pretty quickly. Your horizontal distance is not that great, but they're not floaty jumps. Like, he kind of gets up and gets back down, at a predictable rate, and that's fine and good. Your combat is pretty basic. Like, everything's pretty basic early on. It layers things on, as games are wont to do. But the combat is pretty... like, I never felt like it got, like, too crazy. You're going to be mashing your main scissoring attack button most of the game. Though you do get other stuff to help you out. But you do get lots of stuff. So you start out in the first level is based on Red Riding Hood, where... Red is this like crazy bloodthirsty girl. Oh, all the fairy tales are like fucked up, by the way. It's one of those dark fairy tale deals. So yeah, she's like trying to burn all the wolves out of the forest, and like everything, and this holds true for like the whole game, is just like, I think it is very creative with its art design, its visuals. I think the levels are really cool to traverse and kind of see what they do with this twisted fairy tale aesthetic, which is decently worn territory at this point. And, you know, can run risk of just being tedious, like with, well, okay, yeah, we get it. But I think they do a good job. And that is really my favorite part of the game, was just like seeing the levels and seeing what they did and the little touches that they put in there. Cause not everything, like sometimes, you know, you'll see, obstacles or set pieces that are like clearly like built out of found items, or there's like literally, you know, at the end of the first level, like you're going under the girl's bed, like suddenly like the edge of the bed is very apparent in the world, which was otherwise, you know, this forest. So like you'll see just kind of found real world items scattered about, in making this fantasy backdrop, which I think is really cool. And you know, the first level does a good job of just kind of introducing you to the basics of the game, and is really the one I enjoyed the most. But you get to the end of the first level and you unlock the dash, the air dash, which made me realize like, oh, well, I guess solidified the suspicion I had that like these levels have secrets and side paths hidden in them. I was kind of not sure when I was first going through it if it was that type of game, but it is certainly that type of game, where you can revisit chapters with abilities you find further on to find more stuff to unlock for your character. The stuff you'll find kind of off the side, you'll find like experience bonuses, you will find skills, which you can equip a certain amount of skills on your character any given time, which can be like, okay, your healing is faster, or your dash is invincible, just stuff like that. And you'll find those, and that's good. Worthwhile things to seek out and find. Your range of abilities does grow pretty broadly, pretty quickly. I did mention the heal. That is something you do. You have like a meter, so you hold down the button, LB, to do a heal, which takes a certain amount of time. It's reminiscent to me of Hollow Knight, where you kind of have this push-pull. Like, yeah, you can heal in battle, but you gotta have space in order to do it, and like your little fairy will like literally take a needle and like kind of stitch your stuffed bear ass up. And you'll fill up that meter by just like doing damage and attacks in battle. So it's very similar to the Hollow Knight mechanic, if you're familiar with that. You'll get a grappling hook, which is cool. You will get a double jump, which is always welcome. You get like ranged attacks, you get heavy attacks, you get charged attacks. So you get layered on quite a bit of stuff. And it feels, you know, pretty good unlocking this stuff. It's all, you know, substantial additions to your character's arsenal for movement and combat. There is a skill tree. Just as you're beating the crap out of enemies, you are gaining experience, and you gain levels at a pretty decent rate. And every level you get a skill point, so you can unlock another node on that skill tree. Just like really good, solid video gamey stuff. Top to bottom, and I was really optimistic coming out of that first level that I was really gonna like really enjoy this game. But the more I played, the more I felt like the, you know, all the mechanics they were layering on just like couldn't quite keep up with like the challenges they were presenting in the level design. Like, I first started having problems in the second level, which is based on Jack and the Beanstalk, the Beanstalk specifically. And I suddenly started to have like issues just kind of like parsing out, you know, where platforms were in the levels. It was like a little bit of a thing in the first level, but here I was really just like, okay, well, what goddamn parts of this beanstalk are safe for me to step on? And how exactly are these platforms going to react? And I was just like, there was like a little, started to be a little bit of frustration where I was like, okay, I'm just not sure how I'm supposed to traverse this. And at that point, like, you only have the dash, and I think you get the grappling hook partway through that level. So it's, you know, it starts layering things on, but I'm like, okay, well, you know, it's still cool going around there. And then that kind of continued. And then, like, the first thing that really frustrated me is sort of a, like, well, it's like a set piece encounter on the following level when you're being chased by the giant that lives at the top of the beanstalk. And I was having a fucker of a time getting through this section that I just feel like was not designed very well in terms of, like, you know, you're being chased, you have to do this platforming while you're chased, so everything you're doing needs to be responsive and work quickly, and the camera is kind of following your fairy friend and going all over the place, and not always giving you a lot of time to, like, change directions and figure out where you need to go. And I was having, just did not like it. I started getting really frustrated at that point, and then that started kind of carrying over. Everything started, like compounding, then moving into, like, the fourth area, which is this neatly designed kind of, it's much more open than the other levels, which is very, it's a weird mishmash of things. Like, it's mainly based sort of on Peter Pan, but there's also, like, nasty little tooth fairies, and you're, like, helping out a genie, like, you're granting wishes to him, but it's mainly Peter Pan based, I would say, where it's just like, okay, I'm trying to figure out where I need to go. I'm not sure, like, what I can jump on, or, like, I'm sliding down these things and I don't know where I'm supposed to jump. I'm suddenly finding that this, like, the double jump in the game is not being as responsive as I feel like it should be. Like, I'm hitting the button and I'm just not double jumping, and it is causing problems. And a lot of these levels, and this actually goes back to the very first level, like, there's a lot of verticality built into the levels sometimes. And you'll get into situations where you will fall down very far and have to repeat a lot of vertical platforming. And that is
never fun.
Never fun. It is, because in a lot of cases, it is a situation where it's not costing you anything but your time, and fuck that.
And patience. Just,
yes. Very. Yeah. Your time and your patience. And it's just, like, really frustrating. And I, like, that existed kind of in every level, but it didn't really start bothering me until that last, or the fourth one, last one. That is not the last level. there are more than four levels in the game. It didn't start bothering me until that level, because it is so open and there is so much, you know, it's going in different directions, and sometimes, you know, it is going up and then you'll fall down and you'll end up in a completely different part of the level. And it's like, okay, well, now I don't even know where I am, and I have to hike back over this way and try to find the path again. And that is really frustrating. Like I said, the combat, it remains pretty basic. You do get, like, a heavy attack and you do get those ranged attacks, but it's mostly kind of slash, 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 slash. And maybe you dust in a heavy attack here and there later on, but it's serviceable, but not, you know, it's not anything special, in my opinion. And it, you know, it gives you lots of cool moves that you, nothing unexpected for a platforming game, but just as the game goes on and it starts to ramp up that challenge, like, the lack of responsiveness and kind of some of the lack of distinction in the level design started to really gnaw at me. Like, platform, like, distinction of platforms is a problem I actually had to in the first Ori game. Pernell, you wouldn't know anything about this. No. It's something I feel like they addressed, like, very well in the second Ori game, and they made those platforms much more distinct. And it's something that you really have to look out for when you're making a, like, 2.5D platformer. Is, like, it can be really tough to tell, like, okay, what is background and what is something I can interact with. And unfortunately, you know, I thought this was going to be, like, a really fun, kind of nice cruise through some really well rendered kind of adaptations of these fairy tales, and there's definitely cool stuff to see. Like I said, that is my favorite part, is just seeing the levels and the stuff that they made. But playing through them was not always the best time for me.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Well, the game's sitting $25 on the Xbox and $20 on PC. What are your thoughts?
$20 on PC, how nice. I think it is. It's a try it for me. It really just like, because if I wasn't reviewing, I probably would have stopped playing it earlier on, just getting frustrated. I would just been like, okay, this isn't worth it anymore. But I really, you know, pushed through and, you know, like, was hoping that I wanted to see more of it. I just wanted to see more of it. But yeah, under my own momentum, I probably would have put the game down sooner, just being displeased with what I was seeing. But I do think, I don't want to end on a downer note, because I do think the game has some really cool, fun, entertaining things going on. And it is genuinely worth a try because of that. I fall a little bit short of just giving an outright buy it.
Sounds good. All right, cool. That is it for you, Tim.
Night. Get well soon.
Night, Tim.
I'll catch you guys next week. I hope, if some people can fix their fucking inverted controls.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll find out. But yeah. 2022. What are you doing?
What year is it? I mean, seriously. Oh, man. All right. Next game, Unusual Findings, developed by Epic Llama Games, published by ES Digital Games, released October 12th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $19.99. Three friends uncover mysteries in the 1980s. Follow their amazing adventures in a game where your decisions really matter. Be prepared to spin like a record on your incredible journey back to the era of synthesizers, VHS rental stores, 8-bit games, and evil alien conspiracies. Chris and Jacob, this is another tag team venture. How about Jacob, you start this one?
Sure. So with this one, it's very much a throwback to all things 80s, kind of in a similar vein to like Stranger Things on Netflix right now.
And the title is not lost on us.
Yeah. And so you start off with these two teenage boys who, on their, you know, on their quest to go watch some unscrambled porn, end up seeing, well, actually, I mean, it starts off with two, ends up being more, but anyways, you see this meteor crash down into the forest, and you know, well, scrambled porn's not working, let's go check that out. You get there and you find a dead park ranger, and there's now an alien thing on the loose. And pretty much this game is just a love letter to pretty much anything 80s. Like if there's a scene that like ends up getting referenced somewhere along the line, then like you're gonna see a movie poster referencing it, or you'll see it flashing on the TV. And yeah, it's a simple point and click adventure, you know, very reminiscent of the ones that, you know, we grew up with in the 90s from LucasArts. You know, you have the usual wheel of like, you can either touch, talk, or see, or like look at an item, person, location, whatever. And then, like, you'll gather up items. Sometimes you'll have to combine them to solve puzzles. Sometimes you'll have to talk to people, go to, like, a different location and find something. It's, you know, it's, as I said, it's standard point-and-click adventure fare. You know, I thought it played pretty well, to be honest, on the Xbox. My only issue with it, and like this is an issue that a lot of point and click adventure games end up running into, is that, I mean, we're not asking you to solve the puzzle for us, but like there were a couple of times in the game, like during a puzzle, that I felt like you know, I should be able to just go to the next thing, but of course the game's just like, oh no, you need, like, I don't know, I'm just going to make up stuff off my desk. You need a water bottle, like a half-eaten thing of nachos, and a like plastic spoon, like, to get to the next thing. And it's just like, why? I can walk right there. I can open the door. The door is like literally open. But yeah. And so not everything was so intuitive, but you know, again, like standard classic point and click adventure games, eventually, you know, the easiest way to solve the puzzle is just grab up every damn thing and then just try to combine it and figure out what the fuck makes the puzzle work. So,
Chris, what did you think of it?
Yeah, pretty much. It's standard point and click fare. It's pretty light on the puzzle solving. I mean, I didn't get all the way through the game. Maybe they will throw some like bonkers stuff at you, but I found it was more dialogue heavy than anything. They really just want to kind of get you immersed in the story. The story is pretty cool. Like I said, it's definitely like just kind of a, you know, kids investigating like an alien monster kind of situation. And, you know, it does that thing where, you know, the tutorial puzzle like basically has you poke around for items and then like kind of intuitively figure out to combine them into like one thing. And it's pretty great that way. I'm going to say, like, you know, big points to this game for the aesthetics and like the attention to detail as much as it can be. You know, your main character is the kid with the Letterman jacket, and he's got his tough friend who has the bandana, and then
like one of them looks like they're out of Goonies. Another one looks like Teen Wolf. Like I forget who the nerdy guy was supposed to, like, he looks like he's a standard kid. Anthony Michael Hall character.
Yeah, it's very much like that. Now, the interesting thing about this game is, like, kind of the, because obviously it's a small indie game, they can't just say Star Wars, right? So they, yeah, you know, they'll have a Millennial Falcon in it, but they'll, like, call it, like, something completely different. Just call it
Millennial Falcon?
Millennium Falcon, whatever, I don't know. I'm doing it to prevent a copyright strike, which is what this game's doing. They'll just call it like, this is a Galaxy Starfighter or something, you know. It's kind of like the opposite of like a Ready Player One situation where all they do is name drop licensed like trademarks instead of like doing anything interesting. But like this game, they have to skirt around that. So it's like, but what I like about this is that the pixel art allows for posters to be just low res enough that they can straight up show like Star Wars, you know, Return of the Jedi. And yeah, there's not actual letters there. It's just kind of jumbled pixels. So like, you know what it is.
Exactly. But, yeah. Like,
but it is.
Go ahead. I was going to say that, like, yeah, like there's like a, there's a movie poster for They Live in there, yeah, that like, you know, straight away, I mean, exactly what you're looking at, even though it doesn't say it,
right? And speaking of the pixel art, it is really good. The background's amazing. Of course, they throw in the modern amenities such as like particle and light effects, but on top of like really good pixel art, I think that's really nice. The other nice touches, so I'm playing the Switch version, and I actually only found out right as we were reviewing this, because I was going to say that in like, you can play it in touch mode on the Switch, in portable mode on the touchscreen, and when you're in portable mode only, it gives you a little Space Invaders spaceship up in the upper right corner, and if you tap it, it'll put little Space Invader like aliens like on all of the touch points. Which I always appreciate in a point and click, when they allow you to like see all the hot spots. And nice. I actually just found out that if you're in docked mode, you have to push up on the D-pad, and that'll light up the invaders. So so that's really cool. I like that. You know, the pause screen is an arcade, all kinds of stuff like that. In fact, the game does start off with a game of Space Invaders that gets interrupted, which is pretty funny, because it actually lets you play Space Invaders for like 5 seconds, and then your dad shuts it off. So it gives you the experience of having your dad shut off your game, which is kind of amazing. So yeah, and the other thing I want to say that I appreciate possibly most of all about, like, since I guess we got into like mechanics and stuff, like, it doesn't have a whole lot of gameplay options. You know, it lets you control the cursor speed, which is nice if you're playing with a controller. And, you know, the relative cursor movement. But it has streamer mode, which disables all of the licensed music so that you can stream it without getting muted.
That's handy.
Oh, I wish they would have had that in Stick It to the Man, which literally had, like, the song, like one of the songs from The Big Lebowski in it that, you know, I played through the whole game on stream and got my ass muted for each VOD, so I just
oh man,
couldn't stand that. And I couldn't turn off the music, but I wanted to keep the voice acting. So every point and click game developer, do this, please. Or just any developer of video games, have a streamer mode that turns off licensed junk, please.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go.
Well, the game's sitting at $20. What do you think?
Honestly, again,
No, you went first.
Honestly, even though I'm a cheap ass, I'm cool with $20. It's a solid entry into the point and click adventure genre, and honestly, I like seeing more of this stuff be available, not only just, you know, available in general, but also on consoles. So for $20, yeah, I'm totally cool with it, especially since I know that they had to do licensing for the music too. Like, Jesus.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I think as a game, I really appreciate it. I'm never sure how to feel about a game that tries to give you 80s nostalgia, but it's like, we have the 80s at home generic like titles for everything, which is not true nostalgia. You're not reminding me of something I know. You're trying to basically create something legal out of something I know, which is funny because the 80s, like movies and stuff, they didn't do that stuff. Like, you could see Coke or Pepsi like right there. And sometimes without the company giving him money or the other way around. But, you know, it just shows what nightmare times we live in now. So I'm going to go ahead and give this a buy it.
Cool. All right. Well, Jacob, that is it for you.
Woo!
So we'll let you get the hell on out of here.
Thank you, sir.
You have any final words?
What could be more final than that?
I'm going to go destroy some ribs. So,
And then so, destroy some toilets.
Probably, yeah.
Pretty late for some riblage.
It's never too late for some ribs.
I don't know, man.
No, man. They've been cooking in the slow cooker. Yeah, for like the afternoon and into the evening. So that shit's gonna fall right off the bone. I can't fucking wait.
You cooking, fangs eating.
Like, I can appreciate Purnell's it. Just grumbling low enough that the mic is barely picking it up.
But yeah, I had no idea what he said.
First of all, now it's actually up to my face. So if you're not picking up anymore, I got a bad feeling from my review content tonight.
It's because you were mumbling.
Yeah.
Anyway, reviews. We got to get back to reviews. Jacob, get the hell out of here.
I'm going to review my ribs. Barbecue ribs, not my ribs.
Nighty night, Jacob.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye.
Next game to talk about is Asterigos Curse of the Stars, developed by Acme Game Studio, published by Tiny Build, released October 11th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $34.99. Embark on a journey full of danger in this action RPG inspired by Greek and Roman mythologies. Explore the breathtaking city of Athens and forge your way through legions of unique foes and mythical bosses to discover the truth behind the city's curse. Purnell, you check this one out, and also our new correspondent Andy Sperry checked this one out and sent in an email. What do you say we start with the email, and then you can build off of what Andy says?
I am down for that. Get him, Andy.
Here goes. Andy says, Asterigos, Curse of the Stars is the newest installment of the action-adventure games, stylized and inspired by Greek and Roman mythology, developed by Acme Game Studio and published by Tiny Build. Asterigos sees the player take control of Hilda, a young warrior of the Northwind Legion who's in search of her father. It has a simple and straightforward storyline that reveals more over time through misplaced notes found along the journey and echoes, which are a series of scene-specific memory recordings. The game is paired with an incredible soundtrack and full voiceovers through the main story. The player starts outside the city of Athens, an ancient city said to be plagued by a magic curse. The curse affects all living things inside and outside the walls of the city, turning some humans and animals into beastly creatures and causing the surrounding forest to grow faster than usual. Hilda awakens outside the city in the forest and realizes most of her weapons and items are missing. She follows a creature who appears to have stolen her belongings and, after a seemingly linear progression through the forest, gets them back. The player quickly picks up a sword and shield as the main weapon and a hammer as the secondary weapon. After the chase through the forest, other weapons are obtained as well, including magic staff, set of daggers, spear, pair of gauntlets, which allow the player to switch between a combination of fast, slow, and ranged attacks that best suits their playing style. These weapons also have a secondary skill that for the extra heavy hit or ability. The player can practice with these weapons while in the forest, which is a disguised adventure tutorial full of enemies. The tutorial brings the player towards the city of Athens, where the real story begins. Steragos is an action RPG that takes a lot of inspiration from other games in the genre. Examples are rest points, which cause all previously defeated enemies to respawn, and the easily laid out point-based level-up system that allows for attack, defense, and weapon boosts. Felt both familiar and more accessible than other titles, enemies are not as ruthless as in other games, so getting back to the action after using a resting point isn't that much of a grind. The level-up system, which unlocks further into the game, doesn't feel overwhelming and allows the player to put points in whichever playstyle they gravitate towards. It doesn't mean the game is easy, but for a player new to the genre, it's definitely a lighter approach compared to some other titles. The short time I spent with the game was pleasant, however, there are a few things that could use some improvement. The controls felt heavy, Hilda's movements and attacks weren't very responsive and would leave the player feeling open too long after an attack finished. A faster dodge and recovery would be nice too, especially for the tougher enemies to come. Taking damage was also a toss-up between the enemy attack and actually landing, or Hilda being pushed away from her current position. Also, the music, though incredible, was at times too loud compared to the voices underneath it, which were great until they weren't. Parts of the conversation the player has later in the game lacked voiceover at all, and the echoes from the past sounded muddled and hard to understand at times. None of the issues ended the playthrough, just a few minor fixes that may have been overlooked during playtesting. Steragos: Curse of the Stars is a great game, and anyone playing can tell the developers put a lot of heart into making this a solid title. Give it a try. There are many secrets to uncover, bosses to defeat, and a story to unfold, and downloadable content is planned to release in early 2023. Pernell, what do you have to say?
Well, one, I feel like I got to step up my game with his write up there. Holy cow. Sounds like someone should have wrote for SMN or for a Hey Poor Player or something, but... as it is me rambling, I don't give reviews like that. But what I can say is that I did like what he had to say about a number of bits, but I disagree with some elements. So the voice component, I don't know if he messed with the options, but I feel like that may well have been resolvable by way of the menu options, because there is a whole music and voice setup there. But I kind of ignored it for the most part, because this was pretty much my first attempt at playing a game on the Steam Deck. And... so I used headphones on it. It didn't give me as much gripes as it could have done, as it could have. One thing I like about this game for sure, he mentioned the skill system, or rather the upgrade system. But there's something interesting about that, in that so you get 6 different weapons in this game. You start with all 6 of them. And it's for the positive of that is that you're able to start working with different, you know, weapon types that you want to get better with immediately. The downside to that, of course, is that it takes away some of the sense of wonder and magic that you'll get from discovering new weapons, because all you do is upgrade the weapons you've got throughout the course of the game and eventually get some elemental buffs to them, too. But this upgrade system that he was talking about, there are 2 types of upgrades. One that is fairly common in this type of game, which is that you get to upgrade and get yourself new abilities, such as like a quick step instead of the roll, and stuff like that. And there's also like different attacks you can use, so you can learn new attacks that are accessible by the different weapons you can use. But unlike a lot of other games like this, there are also perks you unlock on the same tree. The perks come with a positive and a minus. So you might get something that says, this one allows you to heal more damage from potions, but it heals slower and you carry less healing items as a result of using it. Mm. So it kind of makes you have to like be selective on what skills you choose at what given time. Another thing I feel like is worth talking about is that I feel like this is a good example of what you'd want to put to people's ear when they say, I want to play Dark Souls, but it's just too hard. I can't do it. Like, well, to me, this feels like someone said, hey, I like Dark Souls, but it's too hard, and I kind of hate the fact that the lore is always cryptic and annoying to try to figure out. So with this game, it's the lore is pretty much the narrative. You are a person doing specific things. You are a character written for a role. There is lore that gets dumped around as you move around, which is, I guess, par for the course with games like this nowadays. Everything's got to be just left on the ground for some damn reason. But you don't have to worry about going to FAQs to understand what the hell anybody was talking about or why you're doing a thing. They pretty much tell you what you're doing. But it's also a fair bit more forgiving as far as combat goes. Like if you die, for example, you lose a small portion of your starlight, which is the game's currency. But leveling up is through an experience bar. So you don't have to worry about, you know, being unable to level up your character because you keep dying. You'll level up over time eventually. And Starlight, since you can't even bother to recover the amount you lose, but it's also negligible enough not to particularly care, you don't have to be so stressed about dying like you do in a Dark Souls game. You can just kind of, you know, actually learn from your mistakes and move forward with minimal penalty. Honestly, I don't even feel like the combat's particularly, like, bad. Like not bad, but, like, I don't even find the delay in it. But it might be because I play a lot of Souls-type games. Because all of the movements, from what I can tell, are pretty much deliberate. The only downside is, like, you might find yourself wanting to stagger an enemy sometimes, and your weapon's not doing it when you think it should. But for the most part, you get used to it. And before you know it, you're going to be blocking with the shield object. Which, by the way, the sword and shield are pretty much my default favorite weapon, just because you've got a damn shield to block with. But you'll start getting used to parrying and blocking. Parrying is done with the spear. But blocking and parrying and dodging and rolling. And you'll come up with your favorite weapons whenever you want to use them. And some of them don't even seem like they're good from the start, but they grow on you. Like, I thought the bracelets were stupid. But once you start getting used to using landmines and timing out the fireballs that come out of it, and also learning some more buffs from the skill tree, I started preferring to use that over some of the more conventional things like the hammer or the spear. I don't want to talk too much because that was a pretty detailed, like, write-up email review, which also saves me a lot of verbiage myself. Thank God for that. But I came into this ready to say that I wanted to recommend this game to people because, again, I mean, this does what a lot of people say Souls games can't do. And while most notably being the difficulty setting, which kind of goes either way, because what it generally ends up doing is, like, resulting in, you know, damage sponges versus not so much damage sponges. But the fact that it's even available to players, the fact that you can get your feet wet in a game that doesn't have as much penalties involved to it as a Souls game does, and it's more inviting to keep up with the freaking narrative pace. Like, this is a good game for people to play. And it's not like they fell asleep at the Switch. It's actually a fun title, too. And I find it's got this quality, too. So, cool. Well, I'll stop rambling now.
It's $34.99. What are your thoughts on the game?
This is an easy purchase recommendation. It's a quality game. It's a lot of fun. In fact, I want to say, yes, I should say, the only thing that bugs me is that the lore can get quite wordy. So, you might find yourself skipping some of the text for, like, reading about, you know, the archetype of Archimedes or whatever. You ain't gonna give a shit. You just want to beat up the fat guy with the hammer because he's in your face.
All right, well, moving on. Next game is Kamiwaza Way of the Thief, developed by Acquire, published by NIS America. Released October 11th on Switch, PS4, and PC for $39.99. Join the honorable thief Ibiza in the streets of Mikado and put your thieving skills to the test. Will you walk the path of honor for the sake of family? The choice is yours to make. Chris, what is going on in Kamiwaza Way of the Thief?
There she is, Miss America.
Christ! How is that the first time that's happened?
It's not.
I always think about it.
Yeah.
I've probably done it a couple times. Yeah. I want to say you've done it, too.
Now you gotta be wondering. Maybe I have.
Yeah.
It just seems like we should.
I don't even know the tune. I was making it up. Anyways.
There she goes, Miss America. Anyway.
I believe it.
I assumed you knew. You said, don't do that to me.
I don't watch Miss America pageant.
There he goes, Kamiwaza.
There we go. So Kamiwaza, this is, you know, among all of the just completely random stuff that, like, from, you know, years ago that has been lost and forgotten, and then somehow, like, translated, like, fully translated, cleaned up, and then released on the Switch. This is one of the most kind of WTF sort of, like, entries. It's like, who was asking for Kamiwaza? Like,
well, what is Kamiwaza?
So, Kamiwaza was is a game developed by Acquire, which we'll talk about that, which I like that a thief game is developed by a company called Acquire. Back in 2006, it came out on the PlayStation 2 in Japan only. Now, in case you aren't familiar with Acquire, if you were playing a lot of PlayStation and PlayStation 2 games back in this era, you would know them as the developers of the Tenchu Stealth Assassins games. They also created Way of the Samurai, so very much into ninjas and samurai and you know, all that good stuff, and kind of this game falls along that sort of gameplay of sneaking around and doing things. And the Way of the Samurai is more of a sandbox, and this game is more of a sandbox. So, you know, it this is a natural progression. It's just like, yeah, again, it's just such a random choice. Anyways, so Kamiwaza Way of the Thief is a 3D in the PlayStation 2 era. A game where you play as a thief whose name I am now looking up because I knew it right up until 1 second ago. Hang on here. I forget the guy's name. But Ebizo, something like that. So it opens up with a tutorial stage where Ebizo is he's a new recruit in a gang of thieves called the Silver Foxes or whatever they're called. And you know, it's specifically opening on him speaking with one of his superiors who's kind of teaching him how to like loot houses and stuff of rich people and like saying, hey, we're not going to do any like real lame stuff like kill people, right? And he's like, no, we're good guys, like, or we're just stealing stuff, like we don't do dishonorable things like that. And then he's like, cool. And so you go in, learn how to loot a room, which we'll get to that in a minute. And but then our bro stumbles upon a murder that is taking place. Turns out your group has decided suddenly that their goal is to not only steal but also just straight up murder people. So the Ebizo saves a little girl whose family has just been murdered by the now bad guy thieves, and he after, you know, stealing all the stuff, he makes his escape and sneaks out, and like it kind of teaches you how to sneak out at that point. And then flash forward 10 years, our thief has decided, well, since I don't like murder, and when I, you know, join this group of thieves, they suddenly decided to start murdering people, I'm just going to be a carpenter. And so you know, he gets an honest job working as a carpenter, even though his own house really sucks. And which, you know, you'd think if you're a carpenter, you'd at least work on your own home, right? How expensive is it? You can sneak off with a piece of wood. Anyways, he is raising his daughter, but then suddenly she gets a fever and becomes deathly ill. She needs medicine. And your job is now, because apparently carpentry doesn't pay that much if you can't even fix your own house. You know, Ebizo gets back into the world of thieving, and the story kind of, the way the story goes is that as you steal stuff and acquire medicine, it as an option, like you do have to procure medicine for your dying daughter, adoptive daughter, otherwise she will die and the game will continue. Like, there are multiple endings, and saving her is obviously something you're going to want to do, but it, you know, it can very much go sideways. Right. You get yourself into an ending that you probably, I don't know, probably won't like. But anyways, so as you're going through, then the story kind of unfolds, and it actually branches depending on decisions that you make and actions that you take. And that will include different characters that are kind of like antagonists, different support characters. You run into the old gang, who are still murdering. They're still into murders, except for the one guy who is teaching you, how to steal stuff before. He's a good guy too. He's kind of like, he's kind of doing a, you know, like, well, I'm going to start my own non-murdering thief gang with blackjack and hookers. And, you know, so like that kind of comes up too. And so kind of the way it goes is that, you know, most of it is going to be sneaking into houses and stealing stuff, putting it all in your bag as it gets comically bigger until it is full, and then you go and sell off stuff. You also do side quests for people. Apparently, the end game really relies on side quests. I didn't get that far, but this is what I've read. And the game actually occurs in a day-night cycle, so you have to be aware of what time it is, not only because that's going to affect what kind of stuff you can steal, where, what kind of places you can get into, and such, but it's also going to determine whether your daughter lives or dies. So so that's that. So it's intriguing in that way. It's definitely, and it's a thing that I notice a lot of, like, really you know, a lot of games of this era like to operate on that day and night cycle and make it like kind of a timer. Tulip is a game that I from the same era that did that.
Where's Jacob? He has that game.
I have that game.
I don't have that game.
Good luck then, because
I know I'm jealous because it's not cheap.
I really hope it comes out on Switch though, because Onion Games has been re-releasing stuff that, you know, their creators have made, and Tulip is one of the games that Love Delic worked on, which, you know, they brought back Moon, they can bring back Tulip. Anyway, getting off course. So the actual gameplay of it, so this is where it gets interesting, because, you know, if you remember Tenchu Stealth Assassins or anything like that, it was all about like killing people in like really cool ways but not getting caught. This game is a little different because you can sneak around and never get like caught or anything and like pick people's pockets and everything like that, but the game actually rewards you more for what's kind of like a parry system. So if you get seen, you can push a shoulder button to do essentially a backflip so that you're not recognized, and then you go back into sneak mode. It's the damnedest thing. Like, nothing in the actual sneaking and stealing part of this game makes any sense, which is kind of great. It's a little bit arcadey in a way. So it's like, somebody sees you, you do a backflip, you get 200 style points, and then you go back into sneak mode, pickpocket them from the front, which will look a whole lot like smacking them in the face until they fall over, and then you just steal all their stuff, and then they just lay on the ground unconscious, and then you do things like, you know, steal lanterns by jump kicking them off the walls, and like, you know, do like sweet flips and stuff, and like, basically you like smack items in order for them to like magically float into your bag. And, you know, the game has a system in place as well where if you are caught, then, you know, the police are called. And, you know, I suppose that's all right in this case. But, you know, obviously you got to get out of there. But there's systems in place. The game's a little bit RPG-like in that you can gain skill levels. You can also acquire disguises, which will help you not get recognized. And I love that the game's default disguise that you can wear is a bandana. You just put on a headband and suddenly you're a whole different person. It's very Clark Kent. And yeah, it's just like different things that you can do there. And if you do a lot of side quests and also like help a lot of people in town, because this is kind of a Robin Hood story, like whatever money that your guy doesn't use on medicine and stuff, you kind of goes back into the community and stuff, and so you get a reputation, and if your reputation is better, then it literally affects things like when they hang up wanted posters, that, you know, the wanted posters look less and less like you. Like, more accurate wanted posters equals, you know, that are, you know, easier to be caught. Lots of interesting systems in here. So the only real complaint, oh, and by the way, before I go to complaints, soundtrack is banging. I love the soundtrack. It's really good. Actually, I'm going to seek it out independently of this game. So the only thing really that the game kind of suffers from is that it's a PlayStation 2 game from 2006 that was made by not the hugest company or anything like that. It is a little clunky. A lot of times when you get like the most style points and, you know, like pickpocket four guys in a row by like jumping between them like a gosh darn Sonic platformer or something like that, it's gonna feel mostly like you just lucked out and kind of stuff. Like, a lot of the stuff seems like it happens kind of out of your control. Camera's weird, you know, and you got to use the camera. You know, it's just different things to kind of get used to. It's just, don't expect any kind of realism in the game or anything like that. The graphics are a bit awkward. They did clean them up and make the polygons HD, but they did not up that polygon count at all. Voice acting is all entirely in Japanese, which I kind of prefer, so that's fine. But yeah, it's like, it's one of those things where like a character will do a whole like sentence and their mouth moves like twice, kind of deal, you know. Their head just kind of bobbles around in this weird way. It's very reminiscent of gaming 15 years ago. So that's either a hit or a miss for you, if, you know, depending on what you on what your preferences are. But all in all, I thought this was really charming, and I was actually kind of surprised at how not sneaky and, like, you know, more like, you know, it's more fun. It's less like stealth and more just like, let's just have a good time in Edo era Japan.
Well, the game's sitting at $40. What are your thoughts?
Okay, so $40 is kind of a tall order for a PS2 game that's remade essentially note for note, you know? It is the first time this game is available in English, so if you've been waiting for this game, this is your chance. I will say the $40 price tag is because there is a physical version of this on NIS's website, including a special edition, which even includes like that little thief cloth that like that has that pattern that you'll recognize if you've played like a Kirby game or like Goemon.
Nice.
And just like, you know, Edo era thief. It's like it's very much a style like you recognize. I would say if you are seeking this game out, maybe go ahead and spring for the actual physical game, because $40 for digital only does seem a bit steep on this one for me. However, I have enjoyed this game a lot. I'm going to say, you know, if you're going digital, maybe wait for a sale because it's NIS. But if you are really intrigued by this game, I would say that it is a buy it. And, you know, at $40, I would seek out the physical version of it. So there you go.
If you are going all the way physical, the limited edition is still in stock on the NIS website for $80. Comes with the game, the soundtrack, art cards, pin, collector box, all that fun stuff.
If I didn't just buy me like a real fancy Game Boy Advance that was modded and stuff, like I could totally see paying $80 just to get the soundtrack for this.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Well, next game is Evil, developed by Vest Games, published by Versus Evil, released October 11th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC for $14.99. Betray your friends and lie your way to victory in the multiplayer social deduction game Evil. You must find yourself in a village riddled by a series of murders. Some say it might have been you, or was it? Convince others you're not a murderer to stay alive. Pernell, are you a murderer?
Yes.
And?
Oh, the game. No, yeah. Menacing. So the actual game. So this is an interesting one for me because I didn't get to play as much of it as I would have liked, but I wanted to still try it in the sense that I had a vibe of what it was, and I wasn't wrong about said vibe, which is that it's pretty much werewolf with extra steps. So the idea behind this game is you are in a town. This town is played by some traders. I'm not even going to go into the terminology they use. They had like a specific name for them. But the town is played by potential traders, but no one knows who the heck they actually are, except for those who actually are them. So what happens is the game has, well, when you start the game, you're denoted as to whether you're a trader or not, but you're also given specific roles depending on like different types of villager roles. So for example, you have, like, the character that I played as, which was the Ghost Whisperer. She's able to pretty much show a role that a person had before they died. So, like, if a person gets killed, and I'll talk about why what happens when dying occurs, like, what is dying? But when someone dies, she's able to, like, look and determine, you know, what their actual role was despite the fact that they're dead. Helps you determine if you made a good choice or not. And there's a detective, which is another role I actually was able to play during the game, which allows you to investigate characters by like sneaking into their houses and checking out documents on their desks. But so, like I said, you get one of these different roles, and you're also deemed as being a conspirator or not. And there's two phases that take place during the game. There's the day phase and the night phase. During the day, you're able to do your general investigations, in which case you're able to kind of run around and check for different, you know, elements pertaining to the different characters. Like, you know, again, like things that you can determine to figure out if the person's a traitor or not. You can spend money at a store to buy items that you can also use to further investigate character identities or to set traps for enemies and things of that nature, which ends up being pretty fun because at night, what happens at night is everyone but the conspirators go to bed and go to sleep. So the conspirators get a certain amount of time, being the night phase, to run, find their victims, and murder them. Once someone gets killed, the night phase pretty much ends, and you go back to the next day phase, in which case everyone's running around trying to figure out where the dead body is, who was murdered. And if they can find them, someone calls a town meeting and they say, well, we found a dead body. It's Jim the Baker. He's dead. And everyone's talking in the town square to determine who killed Jim. and then people can put it to a vote. Like, I think Becky did it. Becky's got those eyes, and I couldn't figure out what she was doing during the second half of the day. She's been sneaky the whole time. And then you can convince other players that the person is also part of the, you know, is a conspirator. You vote on it, and if they're voted as being conspirator, they're burned alive. If they are not a conspirator, rather, if they're not voted as one, it goes back to normal, and you go back to your another day phase.
Were you burned alive?
No, in fact, I screwed everybody up, and I'll tell you why in a few minutes.
Apparently, Thimber has been burned alive numerous times. Thimber says, every time I played, they voted me as the bad guy, and 99% of the time, I was not the bad guy.
This is an interesting element in a sense. Like, I feel like this is going to be one of those games where I think a lot of people might want to try to play with their friends exclusively. Not to say you shouldn't play with strangers, but, well, you already know I have an aversion to playing with strangers. But even still, there's something to be said about being able to get in a group with your friends, and you know your each other's mannerisms and stuff like that. So even if you're not gaming the game, per se, because it takes a little bit to figure out what the game of this system, of this whole thing is, like, ways to tell what people are doing. Like, I heard a guy whispering in a chat, because chat's interesting in this game, too. Speaking, when you're near a person and they hold the L, I think the guy told me it was L2, you can hear the conversations, but when you walk away, you can't hear it anymore. So you kind of can have like private conversations depending on where you're at. But one guy told me that during the day, you can run around and fulfill quests by helping other townsfolk that aren't players, so basically NPCs, and exchange for earning money. The guy told me one thing you can do is try to watch to see who's actually trying to do quests. Because a lot of times the conspirators, if they're not mindful of their surroundings, will just ignore the quests because they don't care who the conspirators are, because they are the conspirators. So there's waste for them. It's almost a waste of time to fulfill quests because you're just buying items that determine what you already know. So he was like, yeah, just be mindful of those people. Whether this is accurate advice or not, I don't know. But this is just people trying to figure out the mechanics of what makes how to break the meta or how to understand the meta. In my case, they'll get a laugh at what happened to me then, because I put on an old headset. I was like, I got to get this in. I got to get this game in. So I put my headset on and I can hear everybody talk, but no one can hear me talk. Turns out the microphone on the headset I use is not working. So I can hear everybody, but no one can hear me. One point, I was the ghost whisperer, right? So I'm like, okay, I'm investigating people. I was a ghost whisperer and also a detective at one point. So I actually went into a person's house and was investigating their desk. I was like, okay, when you investigate the desk, you can only investigate one per day. And it was like, doot, 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 boom, this person is a barbarian. Barbarian is one of the conspirator roles. So I was like, oh, snap, this guy's a conspirator. He's totally a conspirator. So I went and called a town meeting. It was like, vote for this guy. But of course, I couldn't speak to anybody. So I'm just like pecking on the map, voted for the guy. I heard the guy vote. Was like, well, he seems pretty confident. He must be the person. I guess we should kill him. So everybody voted. They killed the guy. The person was not a barbarian. So I was like, what the heck? How the thing told me he was a barbarian. Turns out when you do a detective and you investigate a desk, it gives you one of the three roles the person could be. And you have to investigate three times to get the entirety of their, pretty much of what they could possibly be. And I jumped on the very first roll it gave me.
And so you had them murdered.
I had them killed, baby. Just nice. Wrecked them. But like, the thing about it is that even with what I was able to do, I could see the value in this game. I mean, it can run a little long depending on what people are doing. But then again, so does Werewolf. I'm not sure how many people in this chat have played Werewolf before. But normal Werewolf, they do have roles that pop up here and there, but they're not as intricate as the roles in this game. The game generally revolves around people just yelling at each other for an hour. until either everyone's dead or the werewolf, or you killed the werewolf. But people like doing that. Like, it doesn't need to be this deep, like, complicated game. And I'm thankful for this, because it's not complicated. It just adds a little bit more gamification to it. Now you're running around investigating stuff. Now you're, like, fulfilling quests to earn money to get more items to help you set stuff up. And I like the fact that you can set booby traps around your house to try to prevent the people from killing you if they break into your house. Like, I set up tripwire in my house, and it woke me up when they tripped over the wire. I was like, get away from me. But he still killed me. And another thing I forgot to mention, I don't want to forget, is that there's also, when you die, you go, you come back as a ghost, and there's a whole ghost realm, and you can actually earn Wraith coins to buy ghostly powers to help the living people. And that in itself is its own interesting mechanic there, where you're like, you know, you can actually spend money to make it so that you can kind of like warn a person that's still alive, like, that guy's a fuck up. Don't trust him. And there's something kind of nifty about that, too. And due to the fact that it's all within this game world and you have the little sneaky side chats, this is worth mentioning for sure. Since you have the game world with all the secret chats you can have based on where you are in the town and all, it adds an extra element that normal werewolf doesn't have. Like, you can legitimately know a guy is another conspirator with you. You can sneak off to an area of town no one can see you and have a conversation, and someone can kind of creep up and hopefully get on your conversation. You found this guy, go kill him. So it's like, it's just something interesting. There's a lot of layers that this creates that I think expands upon what makes werewolf fun already. This is, to me, a good example of what video games can do for an otherwise, like, you know, I don't want to call it analog because you're not really manipulating pieces in werewolf, but I'm still going to use it. A digital aspect to an analog experience. And it improves upon it. It doesn't take away, it strip improves upon it. And I actually think the game is fun. I just wish I were better with playing with strangers.
Well, it's sitting at $14.99. What are your thoughts?
I think it's a genuine buy. Good time to play. There's layers to the game. I don't understand much about the challenge system, like as far as what you're unlocking and stuff on that. There's like, I'm guessing it's cosmetic related stuff, because I'm not sure what you're really going to be buying in a game like this. But even with that in mind, as much as you know, I'm not a big fan of battle passes or whatever passes, I still think the game is a buy. It's fun.
Cool. And for the people who are on the fence, it is part of Xbox Game Pass,
which means you're likely to actually get people to play with you because it's free.
Indeed. And if you're a Game Pass member, check your Game Pass perks, because they have a housewarming bundle, which gives you a bunch of DLC for free.
Well, that's pretty nice. I should have realized that.
It's like a $20 value. It's got the Mr. Peterson character from Hello Neighbor. Got another character pack in there. It's got a Stargazer pack with like furniture and goodies. And
for those who don't know, not saying me, where do you go to check these perks?
Well, you can either check the Game Pass section on your console, or you could check the app on your phone. Yes, go check your Game Pass perks, because there's a lot of good shit that they give away for free. Yeah, check it monthly, because there's always new stuff they're giving away.
Board updates by month?
Yes, every month there's something new there.
Nice. So
I have page upon page of stuff that I've gotten for free. Like, it's always like Gems of War, they'll give you some cards and some packs, or Fall Guys, they'll give you costumes or kudos, stuff like that. So there's always nice little treats you could check out.
Well, I'll be investigating that.
All right, next game is the Battle of Polytopia, developed and published by Midjuan, released October 12th on the Switch for $14.99. Battle of Polytopia is an award-winning, unique turn-based strategy game about controlling the map, fighting enemy tribes, discovering new lands, and mastering new technologies. You take on the role as the ruler of a tribe and attempt to build a civilization in a turn-based competition with other tribes. Chris and Pernell, both you check this out. Who wants to start?
I guess I can start. Yeah, Pernell has been, he's been doing all the work here.
Also, you gotta love the fact that, like, you say, who wants to start? And Chris, being, you know, kind Chris, goes, you know, I can start because of Pernell doing, you know, all this. And I go, Chris can start because I've been doing all this.
That lazy bastard. Why doesn't he ever start a review? All right, Polytopia. So, this is a game that I had been hoping would like come around, actually, because this is basically like a quick mobile like kind of game version of the classic Civilization. I mean, like the very first one, where you're just a square moving on a grid, and you know, you establish your little town and, you know, take over other towns. cheese it to where you can do the ending in five moves. Anyways, I played that game a lot. So this is like actually kind of that. So, however, it is isometric and the graphics are voxel graphics. And so you have a few different ways that you can play the game. You can either start a normal campaign where basically you get 30 turns to get as high of a score as possible. Or you can play domination mode where you are the last tribe standing. It's everybody's a tribe. So yeah, basically, I played through normal mode, but it's all the same. You start off with your one character, your one town. Your character can move around, and of course, the rest of the map is obscured by clouds. You can basically you have stars which determine how much stuff you can do in a given turn. So, you know, you can move and your character gets to move once. That doesn't take any stars. But let's say you want to pick some corn or some, you know, apples or something to feed your town. That will cause your population to go up, which is basically like experience points for your town. The, you know, more population, the more they level up and the more you can do with them. And that also unlocks other perks and things like that. So it might cost like 2 stars. So you get to move a spot, you know, pick some corn, your town goes up, and then end turn and then do it all again. The whole point of it is to expand your horizons, literally, as much as you can on this map that they're usually pretty small because this game is meant to go pretty quickly. Like I said, the normal mode only gives you 30 turns. You know, the things that you do basically as your town grows and such, you can basically develop more different kinds of units, and you do that through a tech tree, which a tech tree also requires stars to research and study a particular thing that is on a branching path. Like, let's say you learn how to make archers, you know, and then that might cost you like, you know, 10 stars. And as you learn more things, the cost of everything to learn goes up. So you really have to be strategic that way. And also your tribe can start with some perks too, that, you know, just depends. And yeah, like once you get like your different units, your different kinds of buildings and things like that, then the goal can become to, either, you know, produce a nice diplomatic relationship with the other tribes that are on the map, or just wipe them out. I have not tried the diplomacy route yet, I will say. But, you know, it's very much a thing where it's like, as long as, you know, you just put your unit on top of a town, and then the next turn you can just take over the town. Like, it's that easy. And then, you know, like I said, once you've conquered all the territories, then, you know, you win, or you just get the most score. Like, everything becomes score, so it's kind of like, you know, play the game however you like to try and get the most. And then, yeah, it's got like multiplayer stuff too. So that's, you can play against your friends on this one, which I enjoy that too, if I had any.
Well, you could play with Pernell. Pernell, what did you think of this?
Oh, I love this game. It's not even up for debate. Like, it's,
yeah.
So I've been curious about this whole 4X thing for a while now, despite actually owning Civ 6. And I'm actually, because of the game, I might buy Endless Space. But, so I like the idea of, you know, starting the game and being like, okay, well, I can't see anything because, you know, fog of war, and I need to decide how I want to expand my turf or expand my crew to, you know, branch out a little further. And then you eventually discover another entity out on the map, and you have to determine how you want to engage that entity. And for the record, I did try diplomacy once. But there was like, it was down to like the last 2 units of the entire tribe. And I was like, okay, you know, let's be friends. It's like, screw you. He still wanted to fight to the death. It was pretty funny. But
spoken like a true American. Reduce their tribe down to like 2 people and then start diplomacy.
Can I have your oil now? Fuck you. But like this.
Why don't they like us?
Exactly. But this is a genuinely good game. The only thing that makes me sad is the fact that, well, it's not even a bad thing per se. It's just I wish it was different, which is that the different tribes, the thing that makes them different is they start with a different thing on the skill tree. However, everyone has the same skill tree. So one character might say start with smithing, which is 3 rows, 3 pods down one of the tree lines, but they start with it immediately. But that doesn't mean anyone else can't get smithing. It just means that these guys start with smithing, which in itself is still part of the strategy, because that just means that they can play around with that perk before getting to like late game buildup to have it, and which will affect how they decide to play throughout the entire game, most likely, or at least a good chunk of the game. But there are actually four DLC tribes, which I was really hoping they'd give us codes for. Listen, if you're listening, review this again. But like they have four additional tribes, and when I was reading their descriptions, they seem to have legitimately different skill trees or things that make them 100% stand out from the others. And I wouldn't mind trying some of those. I like how one of the DLC clans is just like a bunch of gibberish. Their name is literal like gibberish. Like, whatever. I don't know what I'm saying here, but they're mysterious. But yeah, the game is fun. I just wish it had more music when you're on the maps, but I guess that's probably a staple for this genre. Like, people would really probably want to just chew bubblegum and listen to like quiet rock while they play this game. But it's a good time. I really enjoyed playing it, and it's good to play on the go, too.
Yeah, I actually did kind of forget this game even does have music.
Yeah, it only plays music in like in the tree menu. Like, hey, I want to choose a skill, and every tribe has their own music for that.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, and yeah, it very much is a mobile game. I mean, if you put the Switch in portable mode, it's like it's all touchscreen and stuff like that. Like the actual icons, you know.
Nice.
We're all touchable. It's very, very friendly for that style of thing. So, yeah, this is definitely like a pick up and play kind of version of something that, you know, has become very complicated. Like I said, the first Civilization is not super complicated. The sixth one is pretty intimidating to me. So this is definitely good for somebody like me who's used to like the old school of doing these kind of turn-based, strategy Civilization sims.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, the game is sitting at $14.99. There is also a digital deluxe edition that includes four bonus special tribes. Those are available for $5 each, so you're saving a couple pennies if you do it the bundle route.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, the you can bundle all four of the tribes into one for $16 yep. instead of $20. So.
Or if you get the digital deluxe, it's about the same price if you buy the all tribes bundle in the game separately, but $15 for the game, $32 for the bundle. What are your thoughts?
I can't speak for the bundle. They didn't give us the bundle.
Exactly. Yeah. We can't talk for the bundle, but as far as the primary game goes, that's an easy recommendation for 15 schmeckles.
Yeah. I'm going to double that, triple it. In fact,
cool. So buy it three times. Got it.
Actually buy it 4x times. I see what I did.
That was unique.
Did you just say unique again? Unique.
I did say unique again.
Of his own accord.
I brought it upon myself.
By the way, I updated the unique macro or whatever in our Twitch chat, so it now counts how many times we have said the word. So it has been said 6 times since October 22.
Oh, for the month. Oh, I mean, you got to step up our game.
Yeah, I just started it last week. So, you know, it'll, as time goes, it'll show its value. But
that's a pretty unique feature to have on a podcast.
All right, one final game to talk about tonight is called Maze Blaze, developed and published by Revelo Games, released October 5th on Xbox One for $9.99. Shoot and blast your way through alien-infested mazes in Maze Blaze, a roguelike action shooter that's intense both in color and gameplay. The goal is simple, enter the maze and gun down anything that stands between you and the exit. Your objective may always be the same, but everything else is endlessly changing. Pernell, what is going on in Maze Blaze?
Well, we had an episode full of ringers and zingers, so unfortunately, has to be one, and that'll be this one. So, Maze Blaze is a game where you are kind of tasked as a sort of soldier. There's no real story here or anything, so it's just like you're like a soldier, and you're plopped down in the middle of a corridor-based maze from a top-down perspective. Your goal is to find the exit and move on to the next floor. You can use the left thumbstick to walk around this maze. You can hold down the B button to kind of get a slight bit of a running boost. And then you'll pretty much be exploring the maze in this facet. However, when a monster shows up, or monsters, because monsters, they'll be frequent, shows up, you need to take them out. This is done by pushing down on the right trigger to fire your gun. Now, if you are running around and you press the trigger, you'll fire directly in front of you. However, if you want to actually aim your gun, you would use your thumb. You would use the right thumbstick to aim and fire your gun. Wait, did I say the right thumbstick to aim and fire your gun? That's crazy talk. No, you don't do that because you can't in this game. Instead, you hold down the left trigger, which plants you firmly on the ground, and then you use the left thumbstick to aim the gun and trigger fire with the right trigger. If the enemies start to swarm you, there is a button that allows you to dash, but it's a very short dash, and it drains your stamina. So it's not the most useful thing to do. So if you can probably not tell by now, or if you can probably tell by now, I was not a fan of that aiming schema. Like,
rather have played as a traditional twin stick shooter instead of like having to lock into place like the old Resident Evil games where you can't move and shoot at the same time.
Abso-friggin-lutely. Now, I'm pretty sure this was deliberate, but my concern about this is a few things. One, it's a very stiff transition to go from planting to not planting. So even if you're like, okay, I'm comfortable with the idea of like shooting and letting go and moving, I'm okay with it. And so at certain points in the game, that's not so bad to do. But once you start getting swarmed by guys, freaking forget it, man. Especially when you got enemies that can fire bullets at you, and they can just like pew pew out at you when you're sitting like, I'm gonna sit still here and aim at you. Like, it's very annoying in that regard. I feel like I died quite a few times in scenarios where like I feel like if I could just freaking twin stick, this wouldn't even be a problem. Like, if they want to keep it this way, maybe make it so that your dash back. Or maybe your dash while you're planted makes you immediately dash backwards and maybe make you dash back further, a little further. That might help with that. But drove me freaking nuts. Like, it really severely hampered my enjoyment potential of this game.
I was really looking forward to this one. I thought visually it looks really cool.
Light particle lighting is really nice. As you're running through the dungeon, like, the dungeon itself is very, like, straightforward for the most part. It's like, here's a corridor. But every once in a while, you'll come across a corridor that has a specific trait associated with it that will impact your time in that section of the maze. And when you get to those, it's very neon lit. For example, there's like an ember. I call it the Ember Corridor. It's a red corridor with, like, fire on the walls. And certain areas of that corridor section, like, ignite here and there, which will damage you if you walk over it. There's also like a purple one that lets you walk much faster while you're inside of it. Another version that slows you down. There's like an ice one for sliding, a dark one for you can't see. And there's a number of just other types that kind of add a little bit of variety to the exploration of the maze. And I honestly was okay. I actually liked that aspect of things. I like having the variety of the maze levels. And like you said, I liked the colorful aspects that it brought to the table. Same for when you fired actual bullets with the different types of bullet fire. I kind of enjoyed that too. In the statement, like, the bullets were very colorful too. Though I sucked at understanding what any of the damn bullets did. I did come across one that I could clearly tell was a ricochet bullet. But for the most part, I was like, I'll just pick up a bunch of bullets. You don't pick what bullets you use. It's just you pick them up. And it seems like, you let me know. So you said you were looking at this. You haven't seen it. I couldn't tell what, but I want to say, like, once you picked up bullets, it kind of ran through a type of bullet. And then once you ran out of that bullet, it depleted it and then locked in the next type of bullets you picked up. And you can have up to 3 bullets in your chamber at a time, or bullet types in your chamber at a time. In addition, I should mention this too. As you're exploring the maze, you'll also come across, let's call them trinkets, 2 per section of the maze. And if you come across it, you can unlock one of 2 different perks to it that you can use throughout the rest of the maze. And the weird thing about this, though, is that when you first get to a pickup, if you've never seen that type of benefit before, it's all in gibberish. So you don't even know what it does. It's almost like you have to pick it up multiple times over the course of multiple runs to completely transcribe and unlock what the item does for you. It's a weird feature, but one that I can see people appreciating as they play more of it, because it allows them that, it extends that, or rather expands that element of discovery. But my problem was, like I said, I couldn't stick it out but so long, because the gunplay was driving me freaking bonkers. Maybe it's just me on this again, because you know, the corridors aren't massive or nothing. They're not like open, wide environments, so maybe it's just me, but I feel like in an environment where you have two thumbsticks on a controller, there's really no need to have you planting your guy in place and aiming the stick, unless they provide you with better options for maneuverability to get out of the way of the enemies when you're being swarmed.
Well, the game's sitting at $10. What are your thoughts on it?
I mean, right now I'm currently going to have to go with a deny it on this. But if something changes down the line regarding some updates or improvements to mobility, that could easily change to a buy.
All right. Well, hopefully they address some issues. Like, what all would you do to fix it?
I mean, I kind of said it earlier, but I mean, the easiest thing I could think of would be essentially like, hey, if I am going to plant myself in place and I'm firing bullets forward, I don't know, maybe the dash button, because again, when you're holding down B button and you're not planted, you run. But when you hold down the plant button and press B, you do a very short dash that has a cooldown. It barely gets you anywhere, and you dash in the direction you're facing. And depending on who's playing, you may well find yourself like, oh crap, I was facing the direction that the enemies are in because I was shooting my gun there. Like, you just gotta dash closer to who's kicking your ass. It'd be nice if just holding down, like just hitting the B button in that position, unless you're holding like a different direction specifically or something. I don't know. Make it so it's like an auto dash backwards and give you a little bit more oomph to your dash. Yeah. I don't know.
Carnage is saying just give us twin stick controls and that would fix a lot.
Absolutely would.
Hopefully Revolo Games hears this and implements some twin stick. If there's any significant updates that change things, we could always take another look at the game. But, yeah, for now, I guess it's a wait on this one. So I guess I will continue to wait on this one.
I mean, honestly, part of me wants to say you should, because I know you're not a big fan of like denies on this show. You should buy it and then do a revisit. Maybe you'll be like, you know, Perdeo, I disagree with you in Carnage. I think the game is great.
That requires time, and I don't have that.
Oh, I know that vibe. What is time? Baby, don't hurt me.
Speaking of time, we are out of it. That is it for this episode. Made it through another one. Thanks to you, Jokers, for being here, and thanks to Tim and Jacob for coming on, doing their thing. Music, what should we play?
I mean...
Sounds good. One-ups works for me. I mean, that's what I clearly heard from you guys.
One-ups?
So, the one-ups. They released a new album.
Okay. It's a good album.
I saw they released new Arcadia Retrocade came out in August. We're going to play something off of that.
All right. I mean, I have nothing against 1UPS. They're a great band. So
yeah, they're good shit. So anyone have any final words?
Oh, can I do my final words in the form of a plug?
Yes.
Okay. If anybody who's listening to this show as it comes out, if you want to check out my funky video game band Super High Tops, we are actually part of the VGM Together showcase that is starting on Friday and going all through the weekend, I think. We are actually the first band, so we're going to be playing a set of funky video game music at 11:45 a.m. Central. That's 12:45 p.m. for you Eastern time zone folks. On this Friday, which is the 21st. So if you want to catch that, it'll be real fun. I mean, we had to pre-record the show, so it's actually already done. But, you know, you'll get to see it. And, you know, if not, I think there will be a VOD later. But it's a rare opportunity. We don't get to play full shows very often. So if you want to check that out, VGM Together, it's going to be on Twitch. That's the handle. Thanks.